You would leave places with bruises on you. Bitches would be hitting on you so hard. And you would be like, man, they were really chatty tonight. You know, it was just, that was a real pleasant evening. And I'm like, Steven, they want your d-.
Congratulations, everyone, on another amazing week. I am your host, Stephen Woodson, and joining me, as always, is the passionate Keith Parker.
Hello.
And you are listening to Congratulations, You're Divorced. Parker, how's your day going, man?
It's going good. I've been meaning to tell you, me and the girlfriend were out running errands yesterday and ended up downtown and drove by our old stomping grounds, just inadvertently, right? Just looked up and was like, oh, yeah, Prost.
Oh, okay.
And just instantly it was filled with glee and happiness and sadness and a little bit of ashamed and just the whole range of emotions that you know, we experienced while we called that place home. So it made me think of the good times, the ugly times, the happy and the sad, and the complete inverse of what that summer was versus the life that I have now of me and my girlfriend going to pick up a lamp from Home Goods and being excited that it's going to go on the console table. So
it is pretty crazy how far we've come. Cause I was driving down Chenal the other day and it was close to sunset and I had the music up. I was just vibing. I left Costco and I was heading home. I had my girls waiting on me. And I had this weird realization because there was a Jeep that looked just like mine in front of me. And it's driving a little bit faster than me. It definitely seems like it has a place to go. And what threw me for a loop was I felt like I was staring through some magical portal into an alternate universe where that's still me running to go see you at Prost. And it blew my mind because like I'm here with a backseat full of groceries that has a car seat, gummy wrappers in the floorboard. And in another timeline, I was racing. We just grabbed sushi or something and we're running back downtown because we don't want to miss, like, we don't want to get there after it's too crowded. We want to see Teddy, see Jimmy, like, make sure we don't have to pay a cover, get in, grab our beer pong table and just set up for the night. And it was really crazy because, like, I get these nostalgic flashbacks all the time of just having, like, all the memories that we shared, all the experiences that we lived, the people that we met, all this stuff that happened during this beautiful time that you and I call Hot Boy Summer. And it was just fascinating because like we had so many perfect nights, so many picture perfect, like it should go in a movie nights with us at the top of the parking deck watching the sunset or hanging out with King downtown and just talking shit with him. It was just, it was such a glorious King. Time. And like, as much as I loved that time of my life, all that does is it doesn't make me sad. It makes me appreciate what I got now. They're like, I do get to take a step back and slow down. I get to hone my crafts. I get to work on my hobbies and I have space to grow myself. But back then it was just like, what are we doing next? What's coming up next?
Well, it's because we didn't really have too much to fill the time, right? So I remember, I think we were at Four Quarter or somewhere drinking standard issue on whatever night that I didn't have the boys. And I think a conversation started about us renting a boat. Because we said we wanted to like rent a cabin, right? We were like, we should really just go somewhere and just rent a cabin and like build a fire and just, and then we talked about, oh, we get on the lake, we get some jet skis or whatever it is. And I was like, we could just pack 10 of our friends with our own alcohol on a boat and just like hit a lake.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a joke, right? And then I think we went back to shuffleboard. Like we played like a few more rounds and then it kind of like, I was like, wait a minute. If we wanted to do that, we just do it.
Yeah. Like, we're adults with adult money. We can go rent a boat if we want to.
We can rent a boat, yeah. And I remember being nervous, like calling the boat people and trying to get everything organized, making sure, like, you know, you said, hey, I got my boat license. We're good. So, you know, Captain Steven at the helm.
Captain Steve.
fucking Scuba Steve.
Scuba Steve.
Scuba Steve is steering the boat.
I was Captain Steve that day.
You were upgraded to captain for one day. And then as soon as you stepped off the boat, it was back to scuba.
Got a demotion.
But I mean, there's been different times in my life where like happiness, like on a scale, right? Like you have happy moments with children are born. You have happy moments with, you know, friends and achievements and milestones. But I remember a weird sense of happiness when we finally organized all of our friends, picked a date, got the boat, showed up at the dock, seen people show up, pulling all their alcohol out the back of their car. We load the boat up. get our little tutorial from, you know, the random, you know, Connor, whoever the fucking generic white kid is working the dock. Let me rephrase that. Connor was the first name. Connor was the first name that came to head for like a generic white kid name. And I was like, yeah, he does have a generic white kid.
It feels right. Connor or Dustin really seem like they fit the
Dustin,
bill.
Dustin was oddly number three because it was Connor, Chad, and Dustin. Those were the three names I had.
Todd didn't even make the list.
Todd didn't make the list. Chad did. The first three. Todd. So, I guess I don't hate enough Todds.
It just feels natural to hate a Todd.
Well, it's natural for me to hate a Kyle.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have friends named Kyle. Fuck you, Kyle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fuck you, Kyle. Fuck you, Kyle. Respect my authority. No, like showing up and watching all of our friends like unload their alcohol out of their cars, right? And we load everything up and the dock worker comes over and's like, all right, y'all need anything? You good? And us just having a smile on our face, like, I guess just give us the keys and like let us fuck off, right?
Yeah.
And he pushes that boat out, and then it's just like, so we're just 10 unattended adults, no adults watching the adults, and we're just gonna drive around the lake.
Yeah, no not supervision.
Drink and drive around the lake. I would like to make that
we
clear.
Would never, we only drink. We would never we do that in our lives. We are responsible anchored. Adults.
Absolutely. Were the passengers drinking? Yes, but the driver under no point would have been consuming alcohol. That is against the law.
Yeah, that is against the law. But you need to settle down and take control of your life if that's what you're out there doing.
Yes, absolutely. Be ashamed of yourself.
Is that what it feels like to be a narcissist?
A little bit, yeah. I guess that's a day in the life of. But I remember seeing you happier than I'd ever seen you, right? You had a grin on your face that could not fucking be wiped off.
I was the captain of a boat.
Look at me. I'm the captain now.
Yeah.
That's what you just...
They handed me the keys. They're like, you're the captain now. It's like, you're damn right I am.
Yeah. Because we all got to drink and you drove the boat. So it was like, wait, we're not going to argue. He's got the license. We're good. And you took us all up and down the river, man. We ran into, you know, went and met up with some of your friends. We ended up, you know, anchoring up by the cliff, right? And Derek ends up swimming off the boat all the way to shore, climbing the cliff, gainering off the cliff, swimming back to the boat.
Yeah.
All as we sit and, you know, what, probably 100, 150 yards away from him, just floating, drinking our...
Just surprised that he's actually swimming that far. I mean, and dude made it. I'm proud of him.
Derek's an anomaly. So that kid is... He has something special. That's for sure. But just the joy in those moments, right? Just making that joy happen for us. For me, it was kind of the kick the door open inside of me for saying, like, you really can just make your own happiness, brother man. Like, you're really in control of this. Like, as long as you don't, you know, you're not going crazy with money, you're being responsible, like, you get to make these crazy magical adventures happen.
Well, let's not forget like how Hot Boy Summer started, because it came out of like tough decisions, tough growing moments where we really had to accept our adulthood and understand that we are responsible for every action that we take. And having just come out of divorce, we both knew like how dangerous those decisions were. Because we didn't know we were setting ourselves up for that kind of trauma whenever we got married. Like, we had no idea that's what was coming down the pipe. So reaching the beginning of what Hot Boy Summer was came out of a lot of heartache, a lot of pain, a lot of adulting. And I mean, that's why it was so special. And that's why something as simple as me just driving a boat, a rented boat at Greer's Ferry, Arkansas, like that became a huge moment in my life because I knew I made a good choice that day.
Well, you told me you had never felt more comfortable and you had this smile on your face that you were like, I feel like this is what I should be doing with my life. Like, you're like, I feel at peace, center, happiness, whatever the greatest word that you could find, you were feeling that because, I mean, no one could say shit to you. Like, no, you really couldn't.
I'm on a boat, motherfucker. Got my swims on, my flippy floppies.
Never thought I'd be on the boat. It's a big blue water we roam. All right. So follow me on this. Because you talked about the start of Hot Boy Summer and what really, because even since we were like teenagers, right? We had a running joke that like we had never been single together, like even post-divorce, right? Like you started dating and
I was in a relationship whenever you and I first reconnected and like you had caught me single and I caught you single, but never at the same time.
Yeah. And I wasn't in any spot to like enjoy my singleness, right? Mm-hmm. Like while I was single and while you were in relationships, or even when you were single, I was still full recovery mode, right? Still trying to pull my head out of the dirt and figure out what was going on with my life.
Well, keep in mind that we actually forced that decision a little bit because let's just set Hot Boy Summer up the way that it should be. Mm-hmm. I'm in a relationship. I'd been in a relationship for probably 6 to 8 months at this point, and it's fairly easy to say now it was a toxic relationship.
It wasn't going well.
It wasn't. You would know better than anybody, honestly, because I wasn't in the right frame of mind. And I came to you and vented everything, vented all my stuff. And I also went to my therapist and vented all of my stuff. And I talked to my mom and vented all my stuff. And this was one of the first moments in my life where my checks and balances and the process that I put in place actually came through for me. And the problem with it was me, because I had said coming out of my divorce that I would never allow myself to make that same mistake again. Everyone around me saw the red flags with me and my ex. Mm-hmm. And I chose to ignore them. So I always said coming out of the divorce that if I'm going to enter another relationship, I'm going to make sure I'm transparent with the closest people in my life, not to a point where it's like rude or, you know, invasive, but I'm going to share what's happening with me. And then that allows my community, my friends, to safety check me and let me know, hey, this seems to be teetering in the wrong direction. You may want to dial it back or have a conversation here. You may want to talk to your therapist, blah, blah, blah. So what happened here was I had you, my mom, and my therapist all tell me, this is a bad relationship. You're working your way back into being stuck.
You got to go. You got to go is what I was telling you. I believe at one point I said, this bitch got one more gin, Steven. One more gin before either you break up with her or I do.
That was exactly what you said, because you said, I'm going to let you do this one more time. I'm going to let you be responsible for your own life. But if you or her try to attempt any of this shit again, I'm just going to break up for you. And we'll, like, even if it ends the friendship, that was the thing that stuck me in my heart, brother, man, is like, you said, even if it ends our friendship, I will break you and her up. So,
and I meant that shit.
Yeah.
I meant that with everything I had. I was like, I'll burn this fucking bridge, but you'll be alive on the other side of it. This bitch won't drag you down with her. Like, that was my thought about it. So,
and I respect that. And I love that about you. I love that about my therapist and my mom. Like, everyone did come together and was telling me basically the same thing, that I need to be very careful about what I'm doing. That definitely was a moment where I realized, okay, I have adult decisions to make. So in this relationship, we'll dive into the, like, this whole relationship could be a season, but this
preach,
but the inner workings of this relationship, we don't have to get into today, but to set up Hot Boy Summer, I just do want to explain that, like, this relationship at one point had been everything that I was looking for. And as we,
every surface thing that you were looking for.
Yes,
exactly. That was a key differentiator there.
Yeah, it was every surface thing that I was looking for. It checked a lot of boxes for who I am, who I wanted to be. And then as it happens in relationships, we started to grow, get more involved into each other's lives, started building some toxic habits, the way we relied on each other for everything, the way we became each other's therapist. It wasn't growing together. It was basically complaining about a lot of different things, attempting to help each other, and then both of us feeling codependent because the other one had helped the other one. So
you felt indebted to the other person because they had helped you out of a bad situation. And then you entered this catch-22 of one person constantly owed the other person. So nobody got a break.
Yeah, 100%. Nobody ever got a break. So we get to the crucial point where the relationship does have to end. And I'll spare you some of the details, but it did take several times. It took you kind of forcing my hand just a little bit. You were always respectful. Mm-hmm. You were the line that gave me the decision to become a real adult, because I kept saying to myself, if I have to let Parker do this for me, like, what kind of man am I? I've been so focused on building a good version of somebody that I can be proud of. If I can't even handle my own problems, I really don't deserve to have any partner at all. So it felt like a test. It felt like something that, like a trial that I had to get through. And so I do inevitably break it off, and I'm wrecked because I've honestly, I don't even know if my divorce was as emotionally raw as the way that stripped me, because there was so much trauma introduced in both of our lives, and we had shared so much that by the time the breakup came, it wasn't just ending a relationship, it was pouring salt on the wound of someone you just helped heal. So it was so scary, so traumatic, so heart-wrenching that it led me to a point where I finally ended with her. You were on standby. You sent one of the best texts I think I've ever received in my life, where you sent me like this bro support guide with all the services that you offer and the time frames services are offered in.
I remember this text, and I remember being high as fuck and being like, how do I support my friend but not smother him, right? Like, I don't really know how to handle you in this situation, because like, this is a, on my side, you should have done been broke up with this bitch. There wasn't nothing.
On my side, like, I should have done been broke up with this bitch.
Well, that was the thing. Is like, I wanted to give you your grieving room, right? But at the same time, like, you know, that bitch was toxic. Like, what? You shouldn't be as upset as you are. So I, you know, I did what I do, right? Like, I cracked a fucking joke. But then to me, I just kept that joke running. And I'm glad it found you well. But it was something to the effect of like, you know, hey, tonight I'll bring you whiskey and whatever your favorite food is, you know, within the next week. If you need me to drive you, take you anywhere, like, I get you're going to be sad, I'll pick up your groceries. And then I think I eventually got into like the shit where it's like, well, if she continues to text you, let me know and I will hack her phone and slash her tires and I will push her vehicle into the river. I think it just continuously got more and more ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just, it seemed like I was just being a genuine supportive person at first until you read about three or four lines in, and then it just got completely absurd.
Well, the problem was that I considered a lot of it. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, it was rough. And I think when I was typing all of them, I knew that. I was like, I may actually have to commit to one of these acts because I'm that kind of friend where if he's like, hey, bro, like, oh no. Like, all right, well, I said it. So
yeah. So needless to say, this breakup goes sideways. Probably one of the worst breakups, I would say, of all time, just because of how many times I started to break up and then caved. And just like,
it was like four.
Yeah. Went another day.
It was, yeah.
I was like, maybe I'll be stronger tomorrow. I can do it. By day four, I'm beaten down, dead to the world. And I mean, barely squeaked out the words like, this is over. We got to end this. Mm-hmm. And that launched into a shitstorm of emotion. So I finally get the words out. We go through a terrible, terrible night where I was supposed to meet you sometime around 7 to decompress, work through everything that just happened, have some bro therapy, and I'd be good to go to work the next day. And what ends up me meeting you at the river around 11:30 with me eating like 3 McDoubles because I hadn't eaten since breakfast that morning, stressing about what's coming this day, and you feeding me whiskey and Coke. And it was just Makers and McDoubles, man. Like, that was what got me through that night. And I remember going to bed, still getting a bunch of texts like, this thing just would not stop. But flash forward a little bit. You're going through a little bit of an issue with the girl you're dating. I ask you the question, like, have you been, and I was projecting in this moment, but like, I asked you the question, have you been like single and just like really enjoyed it, single on purpose? Because where you were at in this journey, it was, you were dating, you were experimenting. That just sounds like you went through a gay phase. I was like,
whoa, I was not experimenting, sir. I was fucking bitches I shouldn't have, but I was not experimenting, okay? I knew what I was doing. This was a failed experiment from the start, sir.
But anyway, I kind of urged you because honestly, I wanted to be single. I wanted to be single at the same time you were single, for us to do what single guys do and just enjoy ourselves, have fun, and, you know, get some drinks, meet strangers, all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, even like my relationship was kind of the first person that wasn't a bot or a one night stand, right? Like, she was a real person. She had a good job.
She was the first person that you dated that there was real potential. It could go somewhere, and it was really up to you to make that choice because she was all in.
Oh, she was 100% all in. She was borderline, just fell in love with me from like the second date. But I was still like, I was still hesitant. I was like, I don't want to meet your kids. I don't want you to. Yeah, pretty much. I didn't want to meet her kids. I didn't want her to meet my kids. Right. I just wanted to date. And she was very adamant on kind of next level, what's coming next, what, like, constantly looking forward. And I was like, I have spent so much of my life looking to the next thing that I haven't ever been able to enjoy the moment that I'm in. And I was enjoying the moments that we had together. And then she pushed it. And like, I felt the same way, kind of like you. I was like, I'm not going to fall down this trap of just kind of whatever else someone wants to go with, I'm going to roll with. So, you know, me and you talked about it. I felt bad because I think we'd only been dating for like not even a month. Like, I think it was like 3 weeks, right?
It was like a month and a half. I feel like y'all were dating a little bit longer, right?
Was it like a month? Oh, okay.
I think it was like, look, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I felt so bad because I had just asked her to be my girlfriend. And I felt like I was turning back around and just being like, nah, I'm good. Because when the red flags happened, it only took me about 3 or 4 days of talking things through with you to be like, all right, this is done. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm out. Like, yeah. I'm 100% out.
You surprised me because of how quick your process has kicked in. Because you came to me, I remember you and I sitting outside my apartment smoking cigarettes in your truck, and you had your first like handful of flags, and you're like, I think these are red. I'm not sure if this relationship is what I want to be in. And then 2-3 days later, like, you had just told me you broke up with her. Like, you didn't even come back for round two of bro therapy. We didn't hash it out on what it looked like to break up. Like, we talked through some of your issues, and then you just made that decision on your own, which, given the circumstance that I just went through, blew my fucking mind.
Well, it made it a lot easier because, like, just a little bit of framework around it, right? Like, she lived an hour away. So, like, you know, when I went and saw her, when she came and saw me, it was like a big deal. Like, it, you know, it was a big trip, especially, you know, having kids and having to coordinate that stuff. So when I was like sitting at my apartment, just kind of being like, I don't want to be in this anymore. I had a choice. I could either continue to fake the relationship for another week and a half or 2 weeks, right, until we saw each other and then break up in person awkwardly. Or I could just rip the fucking Band-Aid off, be a shitty person potentially, and just call her and break up with her, mm-hmm. which is exactly what I did.
Yeah.
and then move on with my life. But I was like, you know what? Like, if I have to be the villain for one person just so I can be the hero in my story, like, I'm okay with that. Like, it's, can you can just be mad at me.
Can I just sidebar real quick, though? Because I do want to say, gentlemen do break up with women in person. But sometimes when you're dating, you just get a little lazy and you just don't want to go through the bullshit.
I didn't have it in me to fake it, right? Like, I had no interest in doing that. So when the choice was fake it for X amount of time until I could break up in person, or just call her and break up with her and then deal with her calling me names or, you know, whatever, doomsday thinking, right? Whatever negative may come of this, I'll just take my lashings and then move on about my day, because I'm not ever going to see her again. She lives an hour away.
Like, yeah, it's easy to avoid.
It's fun. So, yeah. So my scenario was a little easier in the breakup category for that. But that's when the stars lined up, right? Like, you and your girl finally, after, I mean, I will say I was trying to sabotage the relationship, but y'all were doing it fine on your own. But after yours ending and then, you know, mine being built out of straw, and all it took was you just kind of being like, are you happy? Like, Thanos snap, that shit's gone.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, we're back. Like we said, what we're talking about, we're both single. We're both in a good spot in our lives where we know we don't need to be in relationships. We just learned that. Like, you had just crawled out of a giant pitfall, mm-hmm. and I'm sitting there nursing a rolled ankle because I stepped in a pothole. And we were both like, this road is dangerous and we have no need to be on it right now. For what? Like, that's the thing, is that neither one of us had a for what. It was just what? For to have a wife, to be happy, to, like, it was all external shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, none of our goals were really internal faced. It was all to kind of get back where we thought we should be. And that was a massive flaw in both of our thinking. So honestly, us figuring out how to be selfish, which is really what, I mean, for me, what Hot Boy Summer was figuring out how to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it and be okay with telling people no.
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm not interested in this person. No, I don't want to go home with you. No, I don't want this drink. No, I don't want to go here. Whatever it is. But,
well, we had a goal in mind. We had an end goal. You know, we both knew that we did want to be married again. We wanted to have happy, healthy relationships and feel like we came out the other side better overall. But what you and I hadn't done was really sit down and get into the weeds about what type of partner we wanted to have. Ironically, mm-hmm. we both manifested the partners that we have now. I was very specific about my type and who I wanted to be with. You were very specific about your type and who you wanted to be with. Mm-hmm. We even visualized that we're going to meet them out on the beach somewhere on a road trip. And, you know, they're going to be best friends and then we're going to hang out and it's everybody's going to be best friends. And it's this whole cool dynamic. It was like we had ideas, we had minds, and we needed a space to let that stuff breathe and grow a mind of its own. And so that's where, to me, Hot Boy Summer started at Pinnacle Mountain, at Penny. And I remember driving to come meet you there. You were already waiting on me at Penny. You were doing your stretches outside. And I remember I came barreling down the road, and Our Last Night had just released their cover of Hot Girl Bummer. And I was blaring that and just screaming the lyrics and feeling all of it. And I was like, you know what? Summer's coming up. This is my time to take back control of me, to not let life move me, but I move life. And so I was listening to that song, jamming out, met you, we murder a climb. And I remember sitting at the top and I was telling you about Hot Girl Bummer. And we said we needed to have a Hot Boy Summer. Like we needed to have a time where you and I could just connect, not just for each other, not just in our friendship, but just individually connect with our inner self, understand what we're really looking for. And so we set a goal and said, hey, we're not going to date a single person for 90 days. We're going to take at least 3 months. The only way that you and I would be able to enter into another relationship was they have to check all the boxes, not some. They can't have potential. They have to be the damn dream girl. And we had to get the other one's approval. Is that not right?
Yeah. Well, basically the next person you date, you're marrying that's how serious it was. It was not, I like her. I like her job. She's got, like you said, she's got potential. None of that. No. It better be an absolute life disruptor of a woman that comes in. Mm-hmm. Otherwise it's 90 days about us.
So two things happened there that I still, looking back, it blows my mind with how special they were. One, we set up the model of the type of woman that we wanted to be with. We thought it was just going to be those 90 days. But really, in reality, I think you and I gave ourselves time to create a more realistic view of what that woman would be, like the disruptor, somebody that comes into your life and just snatches it out of you. If you're already living an amazing life, the person to come into that better be fucking amazing. They have to be the world changer. And awesomely enough, that's what both of you and I have now. But the other thing that happened during Hot Boy Summer was just getting comfortable and trying new things, getting comfortable and hanging out at Pros till close. Till the lights come on and we're helping them pick up trash cans and move chairs and everything like that.
Shutting down our beer pong table.
Yeah. Creating stories, being up for whatever happens. I remember during this time also, I was really involved heavily with the worship team at church post-divorce. And something that I also did during Hot Boy Summer, I was like, okay, this is going to be a summer of change. If we're putting regulations on women, if we're putting high expectations on experiences, I want freedom. I want to give myself a time and place to really do this. So I took a step back from the worship team. I gave myself room to like not have any obligations and just go out there and see what happens. Because I mean, how many nights during Hot Boy Summer did you and I see the sun come up at a Waffle House? Like,
oh, plenty of them. Yeah. We saw the sun come up from lots of different places that summer. And it was all gorgeous, but they all started with Prost, which, I mean, Prost is still, and it will always hold a special place in my heart because it was the first place post-divorce that I felt comfortable with outside of my house, right? Or outside of my apartment, right? So anytime I went anywhere, I didn't like being there. I wanted to be back at home. Even the good times, right? Even when I enjoyed a ride or had a good workout or had a good hike, I was still just kind of itching. I'd rather be back in my apartment. Prost took all that away. Yeah. Prost was my second home. It was coming in and high-fiving Jimmy and talking shit with him. It was walking over and Beth already having my drink mixed. It was Teddy and Treat and all the security guys coming by to, you know, high five, whatever, give me hugs, just, you know, check in with me, see how things are going. And it felt like I had a family there. And that is, for me, what opened the door to all of the shenanigans that happened following that.
Well, we loved Pro so much that even after our lake day, where we rented the boat and had the friends and the drinks, we parked that boat, took our sunburnt asses back home, showered, threw on new clothes, and still went to Pro's that night because they were having a luau night. Like, that's how much we were. I left a wedding early, Parker, just to make it in time to play around a beer pong with you before last call. Like, that's how important this building was.
Showed up suited and just was like, and I had your drink waiting on you. You walked in, you had a double Baker's and Coke.
You had my cigarette lit for me.
That's true. I handed you a drink and a lit cigarette because I knew you were rushed. I knew you were coming to party. You were coming to have a good time. And I was not about to have some bullshit like trying to find a lighter stopping you from jumping on the table with me. So
that was the glory, though. That was heaven on earth for 90 days straight. Just having that moment, the relationships that we built and the stories that have come out of that. That's how important Hot Boy Summer was.
Just to go back, like, it was a sandbox to play in, right? Because we had we have plenty of fun stories. We have plenty of really good, wholesome, fun nights of just camaraderie or shenanigans or just, you know, inside jokes with the boys. But then there were nights where we ended up in places where we were kind of like, how do we end up here? Or
with people that we shouldn't be around. Yeah.
Why am I here? So
that man is wearing a tutu and has on a skull mask, carrying around a rubber knife. It's Waffle House, 3 o'clock in the morning in Northwest Arkansas. Like, what the fuck is going on?
And then a guy came in with a sequin suit and a top hat, and he's talking about the end of the world. And I'm halfway through my All-Star, still drunk, trying to figure out actually who me and you left there with. Like, who are we actually at fucking Waffle House with? Like, who are these people on our table? Like,
yeah, God, it was great times.
it was the freedom, though, right? It was the freedom to fuck up and then come back the next day and go, you know what? Like, that was funny or that was fun, but that's probably not how we're going to be living our life from now on. So we chalk that up and we move on to the next thing. But another reason that I love Pro so much was because this is where Scuba Steve became Thanos. This is where you learned to take out your proverbial sword and swing that motherfucker.
This is where I learned that I had a sword.
Because it was a real proud dad moment of me, because like I have self-confidence issues. And I have body issues, and I look at you, and I told you this before, and it kind of fucked with you. When I started my workout journey, like, you're my goal body, and you don't understand. You're like, how the fuck am I someone's goal body? Because you don't see yourself the way that other people did. And when I finally started to get you to understand how big you were, how people looked at you, you have a commanding presence. Like, your style is slightly different than everyone else's. Like, you catch people's eye. And then I started pointing that out to you. Watching you, this is a weird verbiage, and I'm sorry, but watching you blossom, watching you open up and be like, butterfly. Oh. Exactly. But because let's be honest, we could do a whole fucking episode on your goddamn hat, okay? And the shit
there will be a whole episode on my hat. Thank you very much.
There is multiple nights that ended in questionable areas over that fucking hat. Yeah. So
it's a powerful hat, man. That was so to go back to Pros for a second, this is where I learned that I had a sword. I remember it was a Thursday night. You and I were a Friday, Saturday night Pros regulars. And it just so happens that this random Thursday, you and I decided to go get chicken wings down at Sticky's. And then we were bored. We weren't ready to call it yet. So we run over to Pros. We're like, we'll get it a couple games of beer pong, no crowd. It's going to be a great night. So we get over there and Prost doesn't have their beer pong table set up. The lights are on full blast, and there's a karaoke machine over in the corner with a very, very random DJ and a very odd crowd of people that were there singing. No one seemed to be enjoying themselves. It seemed like the NPC programmer put them there. Like, it's usually the guy at the coffee shop, but he's there singing karaoke tonight.
Yes.
So we're sitting at a table watching this like monstrosity of a bar scene. And
these misplaced Sims just awkwardly walking around the room together, confused as to why they're in there.
That's the best way I could put it. It was so awkward.
It was. Oh, I never thought about it till now. But yeah, there were They were basically like unprogrammed Sims. It was really awkward.
So anyway, we're sitting at the little pub table that isn't our usual table, not our usual bartender. And I look over and there's these two fairly large women in their late 40s. And I remember them making eyes with me. And it made me really uncomfortable because I was in a relationship and I was confused as to why they were even looking at me. And I remember bringing up to you that, like, I get this a lot. I notice people looking at me and it, like, is there something wrong with me? I don't understand why anyone like would be looking at me. And of course you went on this whole thing about it. Like, bro, they're checking you out. You need to have more confidence, all this kind of shit. But I still couldn't, like, I couldn't wrap my head around it. And that's when you started explaining to me the whole theory on the sword and sheath and that, like, I am this big knight in an awesome story, and I got this giant broadsword strapped to my side. And if I ever actually learn to pull the sword out of the sheath and wield it, that I could take over anything I ever wanted. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, one, thank you, because to have a brother like give you that kind of confidence and to tell you that kind of stuff. I mean, I respected you dearly before then. And then after that, I was like, man, this dude loves me, because those are some amazing words that no one had ever told me. And that's why it shook me so much, because like no one had really ever told me that I was attractive or that I was worthy or that they enjoyed talking with me. And it was really powerful. So once you explained that to me, it gave me like a call to action, because I have a weapon at my disposal. And if I could just learn to use it enough, then let's see what can happen. So,
well, it's just the confidence to wield the weapons you have, right? That's what it is. Because here's my side of this, right? From my side, you have this presence. Then that's why I use the sword reference, right? Because you're almost like this knight. Like, you're just this giant human with a commanding presence and a big spirit that fills it. But for some reason, you're all defensive. Like, that's what I saw. Like, you were confused when people hit on you. Like, a bitch could walk by with a bat and hit you with it, and you would think it was an accident. Like, you would leave places with bruises on you. Bitches would be hitting on you so hard, and you would be like, man, they were really chatty tonight. You know, it was just, that was a real pleasant evening. Like, and I'm like, Steven, they want your dick. Like, and you were just baffled. You were like, what, me? No. She just gave me 3 free drinks because, oh shit, she does think I'm cute. Like, yes, dipshit. Like, when you pick up on that, you should ride that, right? Like, engage in that. And that's how to generate experiences and generate conversations.
It really did open my world, because I mean, it made me see people differently. Honestly, it felt like I put on some 3D glasses and I was actually seeing the third dimension for the first time, that this world isn't 2D. It actually steps out and grabs you if you want it to. And that was crazy, because I'm a homeschooled kid. I didn't go to college. I didn't go to high school. I never understood cliques and large friend groups and gossip and sports and jocks and nerds and all this stuff. Like, I was just me. And most of the women in my life at this point had treated me really poorly. Like, my mom was great, and probably had a couple aunts and some friends along the way. But most of the women, any woman that I was intimate with, had treated me like I was dog shit. Like I said, I was a shelter puppy. Like, you go to pet me, I'm going to flinch. So
let me ask you this. Do you remember the first time that you actually noticed a girl like eyeballing you at Prost? Because I remember, but do you remember?
No, they still blur together. I mean, I had my sword out. I'm retired now, but like it kind of runs together. So,
well, there was, I believe it was a night where you had your hat, and this infamous hat that we'll go into more later, eventually, but this hat is a gorgeous hat, attracts attention. And it doesn't help that you're like fucking 6'4" and you tower above everyone else. And then you have this wonderful hat on, and a girl who is physically your type walks in, and I believe I had my back to the door and you were facing the door. I think you had kind of like looked at me like, bro, this one, she's cute. And then I think the game was over. We swapped sides. Now your back is to her and I can see her. And I watched this girl just eyeball you the entire game. Every time you stopped to pick up a ball, every time you grabbed another drink, every time you put your cigarette out, this chick was looking over and had something to see. And I remember looking at you and being like, bro, like, you saw her, you thought she was cute. this is kind of the one. And like for you to test, right? Like this is the one for you to go talk to, right? And I think somehow, some way, the enough time passed where you didn't go. She ended up, I think, going downstairs or going to Willie D's, right? And we just kept playing. Later that night, we had some drinks in us. We had some games, yada, yada, yada. Well, lo and behold, guess who's back upstairs? The chick that had been eyeballing you. And I think we're 4 or 5 drinks in. I'm assuming she's probably the same, but it appears now that a new player has entered the video game. It appears that the mysterious woman has a boyfriend. And I remember you going like, see, like it was almost kind of like a fuck you moment where you were just like, see, told you, like, I ain't gotta go talk to this girl.
You're full of shit. Why would somebody be checking me out?
Exactly. Like she had a boyfriend, right? So you're good. And I remember looking at you and be like, dude, if you just walked up to her and just snapped, she would break up with him instantaneously. Like you could Thanos their relationship out of existence. I mean, you didn't believe me. It took a little bit.
I didn't believe you, but after a few drinks, I would start to actually believe you. And I liked having fun with it. I'm a nerd. So like I buy into the whole Thanos thing and I was like, you know what? Yeah. Like 50% of the time, like this snap's going to work. And so we'd be sitting there playing beer pong or having drinks downstairs. And I think what I enjoyed most about the whole Thanos experience was like helping you out or helping our friends out. I remember Caitlin, your sister, really crushing over some guy at the end of the bar and he had a girl with him. And I was just like, I got this. I walked by and like literally snapped my fingers and the girl walked away. So from that point on, like I knew that I had some special ability.
That was a funny story because you snapped, she walked away and we were like, oh my God, he actually broke him up. And then like 2.5 hours later, they're fucking screaming at each other at the end of the bar. And I was like, oh, he actually did.
I did.
He's actually Thanos. Like, it was an interesting summer with that power, watching that power develop for you. And that power really being confidence, right? You understanding that like, you can talk to these people. You do have value, right? You're worthy of actually talking to these pretty girls. Why would they ever talk to me? It's like, well, there's a reason, motherfucker. Like, look in the mirror. Ta-da.
It was hard, though, because like it's like if someone walked up to you and said, you can fly. You just have to really believe that you can pick yourself up and fly up into the sky. Like, if someone told that to you, how much could you believe it?
If I saw someone else do it, you couldn't tell me that I couldn't achieve it.
That's valid. Okay. That's valid. It's not where I thought you were going to go.
Well, because selfishly, I was telling you all of these things, hoping that you would do it. And then I could prove to myself that it was also possible because I thought in theory, all of this worked.
Sneaky motherfucker.
Yeah. I mean, dude, let's be honest. Okay. Like you can say what you want, but there's plenty of nights we went out where I felt like the ugly friend, right? I felt like the one that had the dive on the linebacker because like all the pretty girls line up next to you. And they're like, hey, how's it? Or they come over and talk when you go to the bathroom. Like, hey, I'm like, oh, hey, how's it going? They're like, is your friend single? I'm like, bitch, get away from my table. Like, you ain't, no, he's not. He's gay, actually. How about that one? Like,
you got me in trouble with that a few different times. So thank you.
I did because some people were like, oh, he is. Well, my friend here was also eyeballing him. And that's how you get more free drinks. But
that is how you get more free drinks. We won't go into that, though. So it's what's. What's crazy is that like that's not at all how I saw the world. Like I saw you as the one with all the confidence. You had style. Like yes, I was teaching you on style. I knew where we stood in that moment. Like I saw you in certain baggy clothes and I was like, "Let's get you in a fitted t-shirt and some skinny jeans and like we'll tear it up." But like I envied you because of your ability to just walk into a room, truly own it and vibe with anyone. Whoever came up to our table to play us. Like that they were automatically accepted in because you had just this warm, inviting personality. And don't sell yourself short. You got broad ass shoulders. You're an undefeated boxer. You got,
God, you're bringing up shit from high school. Oh God. I read somebody's going to want to fight me now,
but I mean,
my rotator cuff's fucked up. Like don't do it,
but you're an awesome man. I mean, like you got a lot of attributes. You're very smart. You make a lot of money. You, unlike anybody else I've ever met, Parker, grew a beard out of sheer will. And to my knowledge, I was the only person that had ever been able to do that. And you came right along, did it yourself. Like, shoe game on point. You got all this shit going for you. And that's what I saw. I felt like the ugly friend because I didn't know how to talk to anybody. I didn't have confidence in myself. I honestly didn't even care what their story was. I was just so caught up in myself and everything that was wrong with me that I couldn't ever open up to see what anyone else had to say.
we would have been a really good pro wrestling duo, because like I could have been your mouthpiece as a manager, which is basically what Hot Boy Summer was until you got your legs under you, was me constantly getting us or getting people to our table to have experiences. And then you eventually opening up and be like, oh, okay, like these people seem fun, or these girls seem like they actually want to be over here and talk to us. Cause that was the funny part, was I could never go talk to a girl for myself, but by God, if I knew I was going for you, I could be the smoothest motherfucker in that bar.
You were,
but only for you. I was the best wingman, but solo pilot crash. Like it was no, could not do it.
And this, ladies, is why you see a bunch of men out in groups and packs out at bars being sleazy as shit, because none of them have the confidence to just strike it out on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So
pretty much.
Sorry to let that secret out. I feel like I'll get my man card revoked because of that, but that's what's happening. Nobody's actually that confident.
The council will speak to you.
Yeah. They're calling my phone now, actually. Shit.
Oh, God. Rip. If I could make a request from you, good sir, can you give me a story of when your confidence was cemented that you feel comfortable with?
Hell, you're going to have to help me here. I know we got one.
Yeah. Well, I think it was that chick, right? That was the girl. So, cause she came in, I'm cut me anytime you want.
So what happened was, is that like you and I were both playing beer pong, and I was on the door side of the, beer pong table. And her and her friends were at the bar, and I noticed that they were making eyes at me, and I was trying this whole new sword and sheath method out. And I was like, all right, I'll make eyes back, get a little confidence. We can do this. Like I'm not at all insecure. This is all fine. Everything's fine.
Fake it till you make it. Like,
and so I make some eyes back and flash her a little grin and a little smile. And I felt chemistry. Seemed like something was kind of happening there. And I stepped my game up just naturally. The more I let my brain go into somewhere else, the more fluid all of my shots became. So that was when you start seeing me back up and do the little Kobe drop shot and like off the wall kind of shit, eyes closed, like I could nail whatever I needed to. That's when the universe decided to drop a very wild moment in my lap, and the game's on the line. I sink the last shot. You and I are about to go into overtime, and here comes this woman. She walks up, twists my hip, and gives me a giant kiss and
plants one on you.
Yeah.
Stranger.
We haven't spoken words. I don't know this person's name. I don't know the situation. She did that. She said, I'm a great kisser. And then she left. And I looked at you and I said, what the fuck did you just do to me? I was like, I tried one damn time, Parker. I tried to be confident one time. And I now have a stranger trying to kiss me in a public place. What's going on?
Oh, she didn't try. She succeeded. Mission accomplished. Okay. So she was the Tom Cruise of stealing kisses right there. Like she swooped in right after the final buzzer, laid one on you and walked off like a supervillain. And I was just as confused as you were, because I thought surely you knew her. I was like, oh, maybe this is an ex. Maybe this is an old fling. Who else would walk up and kiss a stranger at a bar? It upset me, because now we had to pursue this, because we can't leave this hanging and go into overtime and then come back to it. We immediately have to figure out what's going on.
I wanted to leave, if I remember right. I was so shook by the sequence of events that I was like, okay, that's it. This is it for the night. I guess we'll probably find a new bar now. Maybe we can go check out White Tavern or something.
Like schools moment, right?
Yeah.
You're like, I can't go back no more. I'm done here.
It's over.
Can't be here.
But yeah, I mean, that's what, like, you showed me what a little bit of confidence can do. And I wanted to see where that would take me, where it would take somebody without much life experience. I didn't have any wild college days. I didn't have any of these crazy stories. I had our band days way back when. And honestly, even in that moment, like the insecurity just tried to hang over my head. I felt a spark of something, right? Like we're going to take the Thanos metaphor just a little bit, probably too far, but I got my first Infinity Stone. Like I had the gauntlet. I was prepared for this. You had taught me some things. And then in that one moment, I got the Power Stone. That shit just plops right on my knuckle. It's like, okay, I'm scared. I'm very nervous. Yeah. This is a world I am not used to. But it takes practice. It takes time. I obviously don't have to make out with every stranger that I come across. But when I do get ready to pursue a partner, when I do get ready to set my life up in the trajectory that I want, when we don't have some binding pact and, you know, I can actually start pursuing love again, this definitely will come in handy. It's definitely a skill set that I will use. This isn't for hookups. This is for somebody that I want to become.
And honestly, man, just getting to be a part of that experience of you coming out of your shell, like you said, you being a homeschool kid and not having those college party days or the high school, you know, try this, do this, you know, make these bad choices with these people days or whatever it may be. It was really fun for me to watch because I had lived those days. Like, I didn't need those days. I just needed to be out for me.
Mm-hmm.
So you were relying on me for kind of confidence and being an instigator, right? Being somebody that kind of starts your experience for you. And I was out looking, like I knew what I was doing. I didn't need.
You were very methodical about all your choices.
Yes. I had a blueprint, right? And I was going to follow that plan. I made a plan in the beginning. I knew what I was securing myself in. I knew what I needed to work on. But one of the things I'm really good at is I can make friends anywhere with anybody.
And you chose me.
I did. Twice, motherfucker. Twice. Don't forget that. Like,
I'm so special.
That's what I was looking for with Hot Bar Summer was I wanted some fun memories for me. Everything I had that was fun was tied like with my ex, right? So I didn't have a whole lot of, I had a few years in college before I knew her or a few, you know, high school years and a year in college before I knew her, but all of my adult life was experiences with her. So I was hell bound and determined. I was going to write some stories. We were going to have some fun. And how many times did I tell you that? Like, I don't know what we're going to get into. Just follow me. I'm not going to lead us anywhere bad on purpose.
On purpose.
On purpose.
That's a key word right there.
And I never did.
I did. On purpose. I did several times.
You did, but it was fun while we were there. So,
well, that was the other part of it. So not only was it this fighting insecurity and gaining self-confidence and unsheathing this proverbial sword, for me, it was having this mantra, having this title of Hot Boy Summer, it gave me something to live for. It wasn't all just future oriented. It wasn't all so serious about what kind of man am I going to become. This was vacation. This was taking a vacation from life's expectations.
And what do you do on vacation, brother man? You make experiences. You don't go to the same spots that you always go to. You go to new spots. You talk to new people. And at this point in time, you were scared to talk to new people. I wasn't. I'll talk to anybody. And so you got to build your confidence at the same time that I got to build new memories. And honestly, that's kind of what started the whole nostalgia trip, right? Was just thinking about where I am now and driving by that old landmark and thinking about everything that I went through and all the fun and all the chaos that occurred to get me to where I was.
That's it, man. I mean, the same way I was driving by the Jeep the other day. You know, I saw him driving just a little bit faster than I was. I'm sitting over here in the right lane cruising, and I realized, you know what? Whatever alternate universe Steven that is, like, he's still out there chasing something, but I can sit back with the confidence that I have, and I can sit over here and cruise, and everything's fine. Whenever I feel my insecurity get the best of me, I can look back at that vacation photo album, look back at all those memories that we made, all those crazy stories that we have to tell, and find that if I can have confidence in those moments and the scariest of moments, that whatever's got me down today can't do shit. Like, Thanos is inevitable, bitches. Like, I'm here.
Amen.
I think that's where we're going to wrap up today. We got plenty of more stories from Hot Boy Summer and a lot more to get into, but we can tackle that some other time. But Parker, what are you celebrating today, man?
Two things. One, my oldest turned 10. So, son, if you ever decide to listen to this someday, happy birthday. I love you, and I'm proud of the man that you're becoming.
I'm sorry for the things that you hear us say.
Yeah. He's heard worse in person, I guarantee it, especially by this point. But the second thing is I've been working frantically on trying to get our website updated and make some changes that me and you've been in the background. So I'm celebrating small wins with that, getting small little additional widgets added or additional information or functionality. So of course, just bear with us. It's just a two-man squad here, but I'm celebrating that because that's been something that we've been working on for some weeks now. So,
and I definitely appreciate you doing that. It means a lot. I think it looks great. I definitely recommend everyone to go check out the website and let us know what you think. Let us know if there's any adjustments or anything that you wish that we had. Maybe we have time and we can make it happen for you. We love that feedback.
Yeah, closed mouths don't get fed. So the email's listed. All the socials are there. So let us know what you want to see. Steven, what do you got going, man? What are you celebrating?
Man, I'm celebrating River Rocks.
Like you found one or like
what? No, I bought these. So I'm doing some landscaping at the house. And this week alone, I shoveled just close to 8 tons of river rock at my house to help with some landscape design. And
good Lord.
Yeah, it was a lot. And my back did not appreciate me for doing that much work. But I'm here. I'm healthy. And front yard looks freaking great. And it stormed its ass off the other day. And it definitely helped with the water flow. So it's a little thing, but I'm very proud of it. And honestly, I've never felt that kind of meditation from landscaping. I think I understand what Zen gardens are about now, because by the time I got done with this rock, I'm looking like a dumbass out here, because I'm literally, when I finished unloading all of it and got my plants and everything set, I'm the dumb neighbor that's standing outside watering rocks. So they just assume that I belong in an asylum somewhere. But you know what? There's no HOA, so fuck them.
Yeah.
So I'm outside watering these river rocks, and I realized that I've seen these rocks in so many different places and so many different hiking trails that I've been on with you, and just having these in my front yard now, I catch myself way too often going outside and staring at these rocks, and it brings me back to a place of peace. And I didn't know that just simple landscaping could actually be a meditation practice. So that's what I'm celebrating. It's a big shout out this week to River Rocks.
Yeah. Celebrate peace. I mean, always. So
always. And like always, don't forget to celebrate yourself. Keep your mental health in check and keep growing.
Hit that woo.